Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 82. On this episode, we are talking about the movie Creed. Creed is the continuation or shifting of the Rocky franchise, and to help me talk about it, I've brought on veteran of the show, J.R. Forresteros, who you will probably likely remember from the Storyman and his Don't Split Up podcast. Also, joining him is a newcomer, first-time guest, and co-host of the More Than One Lesson podcast, Reed Lackey. Together, we form an insurmountable trio of unstoppable punching force. Or talking force, or whatever. But anyway, it's great. You'll probably hear us talk a lot about Ryan Coogler from Fruitvale Station fame, who worked on that movie with Michael B. Jordan and brings a lot to this movie. We ask if this movie needed to be made, the best parts of the Rocky franchise. We talk about legacy, Rocky's wisdom in his simple Philadelphia everyman kind of way, and just have a really good time. So I hope you enjoy it. Make sure you guys are checking out the blog. You can find show notes. You can find links to our guests at realworldtheology.com, new reviews, streaming recommendations, more podcasts. We have more reviews and think pieces than we have ever had. We have so many people joining this conversation and contributing stuff. You will always find something interesting there. Follow us on Real World Theology on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to the podcast. You can look for new episodes of this show on the 1st, 10th, and 20th of the month. And guys, and gals, be on the lookout. We have so much getting ready to drop. So keep checking the site. Keep checking the feed. We're going to have a lot of good things coming in January. Not to mention in December when we have so much Star Wars stuff going on. So, subscribe to the podcast on FeedBurner, Stitcher, iTunes, rate and review the show, tell your friends, check out the site, get involved in the conversation, because we've got a really great show for you right now. So here it is, episode 82, Creed and Creating a Legacy. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless. Oh, yeah. So, this is how I pseudo-transition into something moderately important now that we've been talking for a half hour. I hope no one's in a hurry, especially JR, who I think thought this was an hour ago.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll be all right.
You're good? Okay.
Yeah,
me too.
All right. Well, Reed, so you've already talked about your vast love. I mean, not just love, but like really, really, really intense love for the horror genre.
I'm pretty passionate about it.
But so how do you go from, like, how does horror, like, be your favorite genre? I mean, you know, The Exorcist being your favorite movie, and then, like, how do you get to movies like the Rocky franchise? Because it was really interesting seeing the movies that you were interested in when I was like, hey, Reed, you know, what would kind of be up your alley? And it was like, I'm interested in lots of horror movies and this and this and this. Also, the Rocky franchise. I'm like, okay, I'm cool with that. So, like, how do you arrive there?
Well, I can tell you this, and maybe it might come off a bit pretentious. I hope it doesn't. But really what I am terribly interested in, okay, so my top three favorite films, okay, my first favorite film is The Exorcist. For a long time, my number two favorite film was Alfred Hitchcock's original Psycho. And my number three favorite film was It's a Wonderful Life. And just recently, It's a Wonderful Life has now claimed the number two spot over Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, though I love it. What I am terribly interested in is basically kind of this is why I fear that it sounds pretentious, but basically like the battle for life, the struggles that we as people have to overcome, whether those opponents be, you know, natural circumstances, our own discontentment, our own flaws, whether those struggles be, you know, sort of a disillusionment with life, anything like that. And the horror genre embodies that in a much campier way. They are very cut and dried. The metaphors are much more broad in the horror genre. You know, but you could look at, you know, many vampire stories as like a battle with, well, you could look at it as a battle with anything. I talk a lot when I talk about vampire stories as like a battle with addiction or something like that. Like the metaphors are there. The Rocky franchise in general is falls right in line with that general tone, which I love about horror films and about It's a Wonderful Life and about a variety of different stories that I really respond to, which is simply people facing significant odds that their own histories make it difficult for them to overcome. Maybe because the odds themselves, like the struggles, whether they be a monster or some sort of, you know, overt horrific thing, or simply, you know, Ivan Drago, Clubber Lang, Apollo Creed, like when, you know, whatever it is, the struggles that they have to rise to face. I'm terribly fascinated by that story, and I'm much more fascinated by the kinds of stories like the Rocky franchise. And I'm sure once we're actually into the episode proper, I'll talk more about at length about this, if allowed to. But basically, like what I love about the Rocky franchise is that it doesn't make it necessarily about the fight about cleverness or about manipulation. Like the fight is very much about, you know, character, and I don't just mean narrative character. I mean the content of your character and integrity and, you know, finding what is within you that everybody else might dismiss and then rising to meet the challenge that you face. That's something thematically that I respond to very strongly, and it's overt in all of the Rocky movies. Mm-hmm. It's a through line in every single sequel, and, you know, probably best exemplified in the very first one, but I think Creed might be the best representation of it since the first one.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I terribly respond to. I did a list. You'll find, if we get the opportunities to talk again, that I love making lists. I love making top 10 lists and ranking things.
And I love people who write them.
So I love doing that. And, another ridiculously nerdy thing that I like to do is I've made my top 100 films every year for the past 4 years. And this year, what I did was I tracked I don't love math, but I did a little bit of graphing of like, what kind of endings do I like? Do I like happy endings? What kind of genres do I like? Do I like, you know, what themes do I like? And it surprised me to learn that despite my affection and love for the horror genre, that my favorite kind of ending is somewhat of a more nuanced ending where something is gained, but something is lost. And you know, I'm sure we'll be talking about the ending of Creed where like, okay, well, he lost the fight, but won the night. Like those are the kind of endings that I really respond to. You know, where it's not just a sweet little bow on everything, but there's some struggle to it. So I hope that answers your question.
No, I want you to know what date it was that you started making that particular list. So we know what date Reed became self-aware and then declared war on humanity.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, well, I could pull it out somewhere.
Probably, yes. Well, no, so I think that's great too, because that's something I tried to do for the first time this year. I haven't honed it, but it was actually the last episode that Tyler Smith came on the show. He actually encouraged me, I think after the show, we were having this really long conversation, and he said, if you've never tried to sit down and make a top 100 list, I really encourage you to do it, because he said, you know, you'll learn a lot about yourself and what you like, even though I would say, if someone asked me, like, oh, I like everything, you know, I like a little bit from this genre and this genre and this genre, but kind of like what you're saying, you become very insightful about what you actually are in tune with. But the good thing about what you just did was you basically answered when I slyly snuck it in there. You saw through my guys, and my first real intro kind of question to this was, what do you love about the Rocky films? Which I think you did a great job of kind of explaining, Reed. So, JR, I kind of throw it to you now. You were super excited when Creed, the trailers for Creed started dropping, and you were obviously connecting with it, and not necessarily Creed, because at the time we hadn't seen it, but what did you love about the Rocky films of the past?
Boxing films in general. Okay, so let's, before we talk about boxing films, let's talk about boxing. And let's really talk about the platonic ideal of boxing more than the actual sport of boxing itself, which is frankly pretty boring unless you are just like an expert fighter.
Yeah.
Boxing, I would put it along with like wrestling and some of the martial arts, is really one of the purest physical competitions you can engage in. And what I think is interesting, I said this in my review for Real World, what's interesting about boxing is that on the surface, it looks like a physical competition. You see who's stronger or who's got more reach or whatever. But you actually figure out pretty quickly, if you start learning to box at all, that boxing is really about which person is more mentally tough. Who wins a boxing match is nearly always the person who has a greater mastery over their physical body and the person who can push their physical body further than the other person. In a lot of boxing, it's almost a question of who's still standing at the end, more than anything else. As The Simpsons greatly parodied once, right? When Homer would win boxing matches by people exhausting themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. His brain was too small to suffer
right. the blows. Yeah. So people would pummel him and they would just get exhausted and fall over and he would win by knockout. So when you look at a boxing movie, in many ways, it's all, if you're trying to categorize a boxing film, it's almost more in the same category as like Everest or Castaway or one of those like man versus nature films, mm-hmm. except the nature in question is our own human nature, like our own mortality. And what you're questioning is what are the limits of my physical body, of my mortality? Like, what are the limits of my humanity? And can I find those limits and then push past them even by an inch, you know? Mm-hmm. And so in the end of any, and I would put Warrior, if you guys have seen Warrior, in that same camp.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah. Incredible film, right? The best fight films, that's what they are, is they're a celebration of our humanity. They're a celebration of our bodies, and they're a celebration that at the end of the day, what it means to be human is to want to reach beyond the limits of our humanity. And the first Rocky film does this famously well. I mean, it won Best Picture, right, in 1976. Yeah. You know, even when Rocky went into super hilarious awesomeness, I mean, we went and saw Rocky IV at the Alamo Drafthouse on 4th of July, you know, because it's like the one where Rocky wins the Cold War, right? I mean, it's just like so dumb. Like, it's not a good movie, but it's a great movie, you know? It was just so awesome, so fun. And it's the same thing. You have the Russian who's the height of scientific advancement, and you have Rocky that's training in nature, you know, as though America was somehow not the ones training our athletes with science and all that, whatever. But it didn't matter. Like, it's this like mythology that's created that all you need is that like human drive to overcome and to be more than you think you can be. And Rocky, basically by the end of Rocky IV, is a superhero. You know, he's doing the impossible. He's mm-hmm. conquering the bad guys. And I really thought, I mean, I don't know if we're going to go through every single Rocky film individually, but I was blown away by Rocky. I was blown away by Rocky Balboa. I thought it I thought it was a really, the first time I saw that trailer, I was like, come on, how are they going to put Rocky back in the ring? Like, that's just silly. Mm-hmm. But then the way that they did it in the film really, really spoke to Rocky's mortality. It was about what happens when the physical limits of your body are a lot shorter than they used to be, you know, and how do you deal with that? How do you face that? And I mean, I felt like it was a great epilogue to the Rocky franchise, a great mm-hmm. kind of closing chapter. And then when I heard what they were doing with Creed and how they were going to transition, how they were basically going to remake Rocky, except not remake it, except make it like this spiritual successor, I thought it was just brilliant. And when they cast Michael B. Jordan, when they announced that it was Ryan Coogler's project, I could not wait to see it. And I will say it did not disappoint me even a little bit. It exceeded my expectations and my hopes.
So Well, that's kind of going into the kind of next thing I wanted to ask you guys, because with Creed coming out, kind of the handing over of the Rocky franchise, we still have Sylvester Stallone playing Rocky Balboa. And, you know, like you mentioned, JR, Michael B. Jordan coming in as Adonis, you know, Creed's kind of illegitimate bastard son. And I mentioned this when we first got on the call a while back, that it took me a while to put the two pieces together that Ryan Coogler was kind of writing and directing this. And he did Fruitvale Station, which was very, very, very well received from critics and audiences. You know, it wasn't just like, you know, it was an artsy film and audiences didn't get it, or it wasn't explosions and audiences liked it and critics didn't get it. It was just really well liked, and all, you know, working with Michael B. Jordan in that. And I kind of asked myself, before, like I said, before Ryan Coogler was on it, like, did we need another Rocky film? Do we need to really keep telling this story? Like, was there never any hesitation on your part, JR?
Honestly, no. Maybe when I first heard the concept, I was like, But at the same time, gosh, in our age of reboots, and you have a property as tried and true as Rocky. I thought I would rather have that than a reboot.
Yep. Well, obviously, like I said, people, whether we wanted it or not, or whether we should have had it or not, audiences love this one too, because Creed, I think last time I checked, was sitting at like 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, and anything over 90% on Rotten Tomatoes is actually really, really hard to get, especially for a movie that's popular, you know,
especially for the seventh film. Yes. In a franchise that's 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, like, so Reed, I would kind of ask you the same thing. Where did you have, like, when you heard that Creed was coming out, where were your expectations? Did you ever roll your eyes and kind of say, really? Like, another one?
Not for a second. And I know exactly why. Like conceptually, when I first heard that they were making Creed, I was on board from the title. And here's why. It's because, speaking on the Rocky franchise as a whole, and I don't know if either of you would bristle against this, but this is just my take on it. For the Rocky franchise as a whole, unquestionably the most important relationship in Rocky Balboa, the character's life, is Adrian. Adrian's unquestionably the most important person in his life. But narratively, for the story, for the plot developments, the second most important character in Rocky's life, and I would argue even the most important character when you're talking about the progression of the story, is Apollo Creed. Because in the very first one, he's the one who gives Rocky the shot, and he's the one who brings Rocky up. In the second one, it's the rematch with him that makes him the champ. I guess we should say spoilers for all of the Rocky
movies. Yeah, I knew. I was gonna say, not only for the old movies, but I know it's your first time on the show, Reed, and I usually end up somewhere around this part saying, hey, if you've never listened to the show before, we're going to talk about the whole movie. So there's not like a non-spoiler and then a spoiler section. We're going to talk about all the Rocky films in this case. Anything's fair game, and about Creed, so say whatever you want.
Okay, well, thank you.
People have been warned.
And, you know, I don't know how well you remember Rocky III, but it's my favorite story beat in any of the seven films, that Rocky, in the beginning of Rocky III, and honestly, Creed, in my opinion, is as much a direct sequel to Rocky III as it is the seventh film in the franchise, because of what it ties in thematically, because... in Rocky III, in the beginning of it, Rocky has become the champ. He's now enamored with the fame. He's gone soft. He's all about the spectacle. He himself as a character isn't morally devalued, but he's not hungry anymore. He's not about the fight. He's living in the mansion. There's an appearance by Hulk Hogan because they do a stunt with the wrestling gimmick. So then when the villain Clubber Lang comes in and just mops the mat with him, and then also, you know, kind of in a bit of a contrived sequence of events, causes accidentally the death of Mickey, who's been there from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite story beats, period, that when Rocky is a broken man who has lost everything, the person who comes back into his life to offer his services as a trainer and as a mentor is Apollo Creed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Apollo Creed comes back in, rips Rocky from the shadows. And, you know, it's the song most closely associated with the Rocky franchise, but Eye of the Tiger is from Rocky III.
It's the Eye of the Tiger. Well,
that's that's right. And, I mean, and, you know, some of the most famous chord progressions in all of rock history is you know, like it's mm-hmm. it's iconic, and it's from Rocky III because that's what Apollo says to him. You got to get the Eye of the Tiger back, and you know, it's and so what's great is I think, you know, and then of course even as a bit cartoonish as Rocky IV is, you know, that's where we lose Apollo,
yeah,
because mm-hmm. you know that's where the Russian gets him with Rocky in his corner, and it's pivotal to understanding what happens in the end of Creed that Rocky tries to stop that fight. And in deference to his old friend who says, don't you dare stop this fight, you know, Rocky doesn't stop it and Apollo loses his life, which is, you know, as I said, that whole film, even the sad parts are a bit cartoonish, a bit of a caricature than an actual real progression of characters. But then that brings us, you know, I'll skip over five, which I'd love to pretend doesn't exist. No offense. But
yeah, sorry, Tommy the Machine Gun.
Exactly. But I will say, JR, I felt exactly the same way about Rocky Balboa. I went to see Rocky Balboa on Christmas Day in 2006, and I absolutely adored it. I remember when the montage sequence came up, somebody in our theater yelled, "This is what I paid my money for!" Like, you know, like, this is it, you know, And also, I think Rocky Balboa had easily one of the most, if not the most, inspiring speeches in the entire Rocky franchise. When it, you know, it ain't about how hard you can hit; it's about how hard you can get hit. You know, and there's a lot of depth there. But bringing it to full circle back to Creed, they're playing. When I heard that they were making Creed, my immediate reaction, because of that entire overlong spiel that I just gave you, was yes. This is the obvious next step for this character. If you were going to do anything, this is the next thing you do.
Yeah, you had to move on from.
Yeah, I mean, it was brilliant, right? When you're like, oh, Rocky becomes Mickey.
Exactly.
Right. I mean,
exactly.
Like, oh yeah, like when once you say it, it's inevitable. Yeah. How how could it be anything else? Like that is perfect, perfect, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why even just in the concept, like I hadn't seen Fruitvale Station when I first heard about it, but I saw Fruitvale Station before I went into Creed, and Ryan Coogler's certainly a filmmaker to watch for. But when I heard he was involved, and Stallone didn't even want to do it. Like Stallone didn't want to bring back the character, and it was Coogler's story vision and what he wanted to do with the character that brought Stallone back. So just the more that I heard as they're developing the film, the more excited I got. I was worried. I said to my wife before we went to see it, I said, I'm scared I'm overhyped because we only saw it 2 days ago. So all the reviews had come in, which I stayed away from reading the specific reviews, but I did mm-hmm. see the Rotten Tomatoes rating. I had heard some of the slant comments and you know, the general praise for the film. So I'm like, I've adored most of the films in this franchise. They've meant a great deal to me. I'm just scared this can't possibly live up to it, and was so happy to walk out of the theater proven wrong.
Well, that's really interesting too, because when I see a high rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and I don't want to necessarily put too much weight on the Rotten Tomatoes thing,
yeah.
But when you have a movie that's like that's kind of like a blockbuster or like, you know, a kind of a tentpole type film, mm-hmm. it's so hard for critics to agree that it's a good movie. Like that's why like something like Mad Max is such an anomaly, because right. like you're not supposed to be able to have a, you know, have a movie about car chases in the desert and crazy people with weird tattoos and zits and weird things. And that's not supposed to make a movie that critics are like, this is so well done. This is technically perfect. Like that just doesn't happen. And so when you have that again, like JR already said, from the seventh film in a franchise, like who makes seven films in their franchise? And it's easily like, I don't want to get to how we rank them or anything. That's a question for way later. But like, just so good, and then it's agreed upon by everybody from every type of critic that this is a good film.
Yeah.
And so I kind of want to go to this piece where Ryan Coogler, I think, is a key to it. He like you mentioned, Reed, kind of had to get had to get Sylvester Stallone on board by telling him, you know, it wasn't the same formula they've been going back to. It was taking the Rocky character in a different direction, and it was kind of almost like passing that baton. Mm-hmm. So, JR, if you could kind of point to anything in particular, what is it that Ryan Coogler is doing in this screenplay and with his directing that is connecting with not only critics but audiences?
Somehow, Ryan Coogler basically remade Rocky and made a sequel to the entire Rocky franchise at the same time. I mean, if you line up the original Rocky film and Creed beat for beat, they're borderline identical, mm-hmm. all the way through the ending, mm-hmm. right? I mean, like everything. And yet it never felt derivative. It never felt like a rehash. Mm-hmm. It felt like a passing of the torch. And that, I mean, is there another franchise that has done this?
Well, I feel like there's lots that will go back to that same well, but you're like, you know, it's like what comedies do a lot of times. It's the exact same plot as the first one, but it's just the same jokes, just bigger.
No, but I mean, can you think of another franchise that has passed the torch to a new generation? The new Ghostbusters film might do this, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm trying.
I guess we're hoping Star Wars does.
Maybe
this.
Star Wars does mm-hmm. it. Maybe yeah.
Which is also a seventh film,
mm-hmm. right? Yeah, I mean, it's just so rare that we even get a film that self-consciously hands itself off to not only a new star mm-hmm. and a new story, but a new director, a new writer, right?
Well, I'll say this: not a movie, but this has basically been the formula for Doctor Who for 50 years.
Sure.
But you know, you don't see that in film, you know?
Right. Well, and it's rare too, for the franchise. I think about this so much with the Rocky movies. It's rare, extremely rare, for what you would classify as non-genre. You know, if you're not in the realm of sci-fi or horror, for a storyline with characters to get this many. Comedies maybe go, I mean, like the new Ghostbusters reboot is going to be a third entry. You know, like the most comedies get maybe three or four if they have the franchise thing. And by that time, people are done with it. Mm-hmm. Horror films get, you know, ad infinitum. But and you know, rarely are the sequels, you know, you'll have some gems here or there, you know, but en masse, the sequels are less compelling than the original entries. But then Rocky's a drama. Like, yes, you could classify it as a sports movie. And maybe if you're doing a subgenre of that, then yes, it would be a sports movie. But if you're not using a subgenre, it's a drama. So yeah. To have seven films of a drama, that's incredible to me. It's absolutely incredible. And I think it deserves it. But it's just amazing to me to think about that people have continued to return, as I have, to this character and continue to be invested in something that does not require, and I'm not the first person to say this, but something that doesn't depend upon, you know, a comic book fandom. It doesn't depend on special effects or car chases. Mm-hmm. It doesn't depend on some of the spectacle that a lot of people tend to think will be required to draw people back in. People are coming back because this is a story and these are characters that they've come to care about. And that's incredible to me.
Yeah, I'd say, too, the other thing that makes this film work is that you've got a young actor and a young director who are clearly paying homage to the source material, but they're also bringing their own vision to this. Yes. Coogler's direction in this film is unbelievable. So many long takes. The fight between his first real fight against the other guy that Rocky wouldn't train is like all one take, and it's unbelievable. Like I found myself holding my breath throughout the fight, and I had one of those like meta moments where I was like in the film, and then I kind of stepped out for a second, and I was like, this is one take. I can't believe what I'm seeing right now. And then I just let myself drop back into it and was just in awe. The scene at the end when it goes from him dancing around and kind of warming up and then walks all the way out into the ring with him. Mm-hmm. Again, all just one take. Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. I mean, I would have not faulted Coogler for showing us essentially when it came to the fights, everything that we'd already seen before. Mm-hmm. I would have said that not only do we not have new ways to shoot fights, but we don't maybe need them because they're really gripping in and of themselves. And yet he found a way to bring something completely new to the table. Not only I think to Rocky, but probably to fight films.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that's what when you say you can put this against the original, or you can put Creed against the original Rocky film, and it's almost beat for beat the same film. You know, it's like the same things kind of happen, the same conclusion gets there, but we're in it for the same reasons. I think that is true, but the reason I think Coogler was a big piece of this is for two things. One, that he brings that style to it. Like this doesn't look really anything like the original Rocky film. It feels like the original Rocky film. The characters kind of feel like they're still in that world. They're still trying to overcome some of those same milestones in their lives and those same challenges. But like, it doesn't visually feel like the original right. Rocky film. Like right. he's brought his own taste to it. And the second thing is that in this one, I really love the fact, and I was recognizing this about 2/3 of the way through the film, trying to put my finger on it. And it was that like, everybody that he uses in this cast, like all the themes are very interrelated. These themes of like everyone's got to fight, you know, everyone's trying to overcome something, where it's Rocky himself or Creed Adonis. Bianca's got her thing. Even the stepmom, I guess, for technically him. But is it really even technically a stepmom? Just
I'm not quite sure how you'd categorize
adopted
that.
Mom, you know. So, adopted. but yeah, Mary Ann, like her, like she has a fight to try to like save this boy, you know, from basically self destruction, you know, and to work so hard and for so long in her life, and then only to possibly lose that and kind of having that wrestling within herself, like what to do. Which it seems like this very minor little thing in the movie, but it's such a big deal because if it's not for her character, one, we never get to discover this person. And then we never get some of that stuff at the end, like some of the real meat of the film. And it feels like every single piece of this film was very specifically put there. There wasn't any waste. There wasn't just homage for homage sakes. And I loved it. And I actually liked what Kenneth Moorfield said, too, about just how we related to the characters. Because he said not only do we learn about the characters who are different than us because they're living a different life and we can kind of relate to their struggles, but we're able to identify with these characters. Like, it's not just like watching a documentary and saying, oh, this situation is tough, I feel bad for them. That's a tough situation, and I feel like I've got a fight that's very similar because I'm fighting something, like I've got a fight in my life that I've got to overcome.
Yeah.
And being able to make that identity connection is, like I said, I think it has, I give so much credit to Coogler and his co-writer for that. And like I said, his direction is also just, I'm almost on the edge of my seat way more than I thought it'd be for this film.
I have to say, whether it's a product, well, I think it's a product of both script and the direction. I have, as is already obvious, I adore the Rocky franchise. Mm-hmm. I have never, and I would even include the first one in this, I have never been, as a viewer, more invested in the outcome of a fight than I was the final fight of Creed.
Mm-hmm.
I was so invested in that character at that point with what it meant for him to carry himself through this fight. And I have to say one thing, and this is as spoilery as it gets, but the moment my wife and I had, you know, we'd both seen all the Rocky films. My wife's Italian, and we love the movies collectively. But we were sitting there, and we were kind of waiting. for the dun 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 dun. Mm-hmm. You know, like we were waiting for the music, and we were like, they would evoke it a few times in subtle ways that we thought were very clever. And even when Creed is doing his final big training montage, you know, they kind of evoke the same feel as that original, you know, montage mm-hmm. music, but it's his own theme. And I'm sitting there as the story is progressing, they've steadily raised the stakes. You know, you raise your stake with Rocky's news about his fight, his personal fight with illness. Then you raise the stakes with, you know, is he taking on the name and is he going to be a fraud? Which I have a lot to say about that too at another time. But you know, like so you continually raise the stakes, but then within the fight, they continue to up the ante because he starts fighting. And when he's fighting, there's that moment where he gets knocked down. And I feel like knocked down, like I think he's, you know, completely out. Like he is genuinely passed out. And Coogler did this brilliant thing, just a genius thing, because he shows the viewing audience, we've all seen the movie. And so we know that he went through these things. But while Creed is sitting there laying on the mat, and he sees those moments from his past, the moment from his childhood, the image of his mom, the image of Bianca shutting the door on him, Rocky fighting for his life, you know, with chemo and all of these things. He sees this, and then the final shot of it, I have chills just thinking about it, the final shot being video footage that he's seen of his father in the ring, and then you just hear his gasp of breath and then he leaps up, you know, and it's shortly thereafter that like he and Rocky have a pep talk that I feel like I'm talking for a long time, so I'll spare that. But like he and Rocky have a very powerful, very important pep talk. And then when he gets back out into the ring for that last bit, then we hear like the bells and the music starts from the earlier franchise. I almost came out of my seat. I was just you gotta be kidding me. And I know that was Coogler being intentional about it shows an incredible amount of restraint as well, because he could have gone into this as some sort of ridiculous fanboy, just, oh, I'm going to throw all my love for this franchise up on the screen. But mm-hmm. it's clear he was also as invested in making a compelling film that was going to simultaneously invest new viewers and fans of the franchise, but especially for fans of the franchise, going to say like, oh, yeah, you guys thought I wouldn't do this, did you? All right, well, here you go. I love it so much. Love it so much.
Well, there is this piece, and I think you've kind of hinted at it, and I know I think both of you would probably want to say something about this, but I know in your review, JR, you said that there's this idea that Adonis has to fight because Creeds are fighters. And while I'm hesitant to love that idea because I don't want anyone's identity to be wrapped up in the fact that they're like imposing physical violence on people, I love the idea that it's a metaphor of fighting, like fighting for their life. But I also like this idea that we're all born with an identity, like an almost unescapable identity, that whether we try to go work in an office with a suit, if we're not office suit people, like, we're never going to be fulfilled doing that. And it reminds me of that C.S. Lewis quote. It says, like, if you find yourself with a desire that no experience in the world can satisfy, then the most probable explanation is that you were made for another world. So there's this idea that I think runs underneath this film, that there are things that will tie into our legacy, but not necessarily talking about legacy, but that we're created and that we can't escape, whether we're running from them or we're trying to do them but failing. Did that kind of idea of birthed destiny kind of resonate with either of you?
Yeah, I mean, JR. so I would say even on a more basic level, I thought there was something really beautiful about this film in that there's a theological truth that all human beings bear the image of God. Like, we are God's children. Mm-hmm. And by virtue of living in a fallen world, we try to inhabit names that are not our own. We try to inhabit names that are not the names of our Father. And so I deeply loved Adonis's journey to claim the legacy of his father. And it was that there was this thing that was in his DNA so deep that he couldn't deny it, even though he tried and his mom tried and everyone tried to suppress it. And it was his father coming out in him. And it wasn't until he stopped running from that completely and completely embraced it, completely took on the name of his father, that he finally found peace. And I think that can be a beautiful spiritual parable, if we'll let it be, for our human condition, that broken as we are, fallen as we are, the image of God still burns within us and still claims us and marks us as gods. And until we stop running and embrace that, we are not going to be our true selves. So Augustine's famous quote, right? Our hearts are restless until they rest in thee, right? I really enjoyed that underpinning to the film.
Well, and I think it's that idea that eventually makes the end of this film so satisfying, which I think, you know, usually you can't get a whole group of theater people to acknowledge that if the good guy loses, the film was good. You know, like your protagonist has to win, right? But yeah, his winning, and this is something, you know, Reed, you touched on, the ending of the film is so nuanced that he loses, but he wins a greater victory than the fight.
Well, and but this is like all the way through the film, right? Mm-hmm. Like Rocky is gonna die because everyone dies. He says that, oh man, that was, he says that like, I don't know, 40 minutes into the film. Yeah. And I was just like floored when he says time takes everyone, it's undefeated.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, right in the heart. You know, Bianca is going to lose her hearing. Like, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. There's nothing she can do about it. And so, and that's why I said about, like, that's why boxing is so great, because, like, our bodies are limited. Like, we are human. We are finite. Like, there is nothing we can do about that. So the meaning comes not from transcending our humanity or becoming something superhuman. It comes from living fully in our limitations, you know. And so, you know, Rocky fights until the end. And Bianca says, you know, until I can't, I'm going to keep doing this. And Creed knocks the guy down. Like, that's it. Like, he loses, but he doesn't lose because he, you know. I mean, that's – I love that. I love that message in the film.
Yeah, and the fact that that he – I mean, he was the first person to ever knock – pretty Ricky Conlon down in his professional career. Creed was the first person to knock him down. You talked, Mikey, about that. Well, and JR, about the name that is almost bordering on heavy handed through the film about the theme,
slightly
the theme of, you know, this name and does he take it on? But I, thinking about it from a spiritual perspective, which, you know, typically matters default there, whether I want them to or not.
Mm-hmm.
I thought their choice of language was interesting. I don't know Coogler's theological perspective, and nor do I really require it to think that they have something contributable to say.
Yeah.
But the first time that he really bristles at the name is outside of Bianca's show when he's called Baby Creed, and you know that has some, you know, obviously he bristles at it for obvious reasons, you know, like Baby Creed, but Ricky Conlon calls him something interesting. He calls him False Creed, which I thought was it struck me because I was sitting here, I was like, wow, that's an interesting choice of word, like for a character who is not particularly well spoken. Like, it's, you know, like I'm sitting here noting the fact that I'm like, False Creed, not fake Creed, you know, not imposter or anything, like False Creed. And you know, obviously the two words combined together might resonate for reasons that are probably irrelevant in the heart of any religious thinker. But like he calls him a false creed, and I'm sitting here thinking, and the tagline on the film, the tagline on the poster is, your legacy is more than a name. And what's fascinating to me about what they did with him finally coming to embrace the name was it became, I think, ultimately like a help to him rather than something that he was running from, rather than something that he was continually trying, like, I've got to do it on my own. And how frequently do we, again, I'm trying to avoid sounding pretentious and maybe I should just turn that off, but like, how frequently do we so badly want to earn, you know, the good graces of God? Like, how frequently do we want to, like, I want to make it on my own. No. I want to do this for God. God will be impressed. God will love it. God, you know, it's like, you know, I want to do this. I want to disassociate myself from all of the tropes. I want to disassociate myself from the typical view of Christians. You know, like, this is a bit of a side comment, so I'll keep it brief. But, you know, a lot of times we'll hear about a prominent evangelical voice that would reflect an attitude or an opinion that we would, you know, disagree with, or we would at least soften, you know, and it could be so easy to say, well, we're not like that. You know, there was a popular video passing around saying, well, I'm Christian, but I'm not ...
Yeah.
You know, so those are the kinds of reactions that we sometimes want to have. We would disassociate ourselves from this, almost as if we're struggling to find our own version of a Christian identity. And in Creed, he wants to make it as a fighter on his own. And it's actually this big thing when he decides, okay, I'm going to enter this arena as Creed. I've got to take on the name. I am a Creed. And it brings me to tears that I guess it's probably an appropriate time for me to mention that speech that he has with Rocky, because Rocky tells him, again, hearkening back to what he's having a flashback from the events of Rocky IV, Stallone, you know, Rocky tells him, I should have stopped the fight with your dad. I'm stopping this fight. You know, that's a moment for him where he's like, I'm not letting the same thing happen to you that happened to your father. I'm stopping this fight. And then, you know, my wife and I were audibly sobbing. I know that makes me sound like a little
bit. No, but dude, like, if you were crying in this movie, your soul is black and dead.
I agree. We were audibly sobbing when, you know, and huge kudos to Michael B. Jordan for a stellar performance. But when he says back to him, you've got to let it continue so that I know that I'm not a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm just, rips my heart out just to even think about it again, you know. And how many times have we, like, you know, we mess up. We take punches that we feel like we should have blocked in our, I'm talking about our walk with God. Like, we take punches we feel like we should have blocked. We throw punches that don't land. We, you know, we're constantly ducking and dodging and constantly, like, it's all this work to be this other thing. And so many times I know for myself, like, maybe don't necessarily think in terms of mistake, but fraud comes into my mind on a daily basis. You know, when I think about, you know, I'm sitting here espousing being a follower of Jesus Christ, and then, you know, my language is salty. Then my, you know, my general attitude about troubles in my life that I think I should be overcoming, you know, I feel like a false Christian. I feel like I'm bearing the name poorly, you know, and sometimes I just want to get out there and I just want to finish the fight so that I can prove to myself and to everybody else that I'm not, you know, a waste, that I'm not a mistake. And so the when he says that, it just hit me so hard. I even said, walking out of it, I put it on Facebook and I said to a couple of my friends, I'm not sure I know what hit me in that movie. Because of how deeply that moment and many others like it affected me. But then what Rocky says back to him is so beautiful, because he says back to him, he says, you know, I never got a chance to thank your dad, you know, and he says, but you have taught me how to fight. And can we just pause for just a second about how big that line is?
Yeah.
The fact that Rocky Balboa, the champion for six films, says to this kid, you have taught me how to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is profound and powerful, because no matter what age you are, no matter what parameters or circumstances your fight are, you need somebody sometimes to come in and teach you that things are worth fighting for and teach you how to fight. And it was beautiful. It was powerful. And then, of course, as I've already mentioned, and this will be the last thing I say before I shut up for a second, is just that, like, you know, where he says, you know, go out there and knock this SOB down, you know, and he says, say it, you know, okay, I'm going to knock the SOB down. And then the music kicks in and he starts fighting. I want to watch your fight.
Oh man, I mean, I feel the exact same way. Like during that part, there were so many man tears, just streaming down my face. I mean, like, how could you not feel it at that point? How could you not feel it? I mean, like, the entire idea of legacy and stuff was, and not feeling like you were a waste, was just so heavy there at the end of the film, and I felt like all of it was earned. Because for some reason, Rocky has this everyman, super teachable, layman's way of looking at the world that takes really complicated things and makes them exceptionally simple and accessible. And it's that line that JR already pointed out wherein he's talking about time, you know, time's undefeated, you know, it's kind of like, boom, like, oh gosh, you know, everyone's going to die. Like, how are you going to approach death? It was in the preview. So I was like, oh great, we're going to get some corny one-liners from Rocky, trying to keep my expectations low when he's sitting there, he's got his glasses off and he's just pointing in the mirror, you know, with Adonis looking in the mirror, and he says, you know, like, this guy, you know, he's like the toughest opponent you'll ever fight. And it's just a very simple, like, guy from the streets, yet incredibly profound way of looking at the world. Everything that they get to by the end of the film, every line, I feel like was so earned and so set up, it couldn't help but hit home.
Yeah.
Which is why, like I said, when they lay on this heavy theme of legacy, I almost thought it couldn't pay off because, like you mentioned earlier, Reed, it was almost too on the nose. And especially with Adonis avoiding stepping into that legacy of his father, but eventually embracing it. I was talking to a youth pastor friend of mine, and he was like, oh, I finally went and saw Creed because you told me to go see it. And I was like, oh, awesome, you loved it, right? He was like, it was so great. He's like, but I took some of my youth kids to go see it, and I was really bothered by this idea of creating your own legacy, because I think he was taking that phrase and seeing how destructive it could be. But I would say that the way that, if you take it in the full narrative, I don't think it's that destructive, especially if you take it in some of the allusions that both you guys have already kind of hit on with taking on like the father's name, but yet creating your own legacy. So what I would ask, and because I know Reed's probably tired of talking. So JR,
I'm never tired of talking. I'm just trying to be respectful.
So I would ask JR first, what role do you think legacy plays in the life of a Christian?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things I would say to that. First of all, I think it really matters that so my second favorite moment in the film is when he opens the box in the training room, and you knew that it was the shorts, and you knew that it was from mom, and I was just like, oh gosh, like, like, that was, to paraphrase Horton Hears a Who, it was like, here come the water sleds, because they had Creed on them, but they also had Johnson, which is, you know, his last name that he had. Yeah. And I grew up in a Christian tradition that taught me, accidentally for the most part, that anything that I wanted must be a sin because I wanted it. And that the parts of me that the things that gave me life were actually probably sinful, and I should stay away from those things, and that Christians weren't really doing it right unless it felt like burdensome and heavy and onerous.
And you shouldn't watch movies like Creed because there's an occasional swear word.
Yeah. It's rated R. There's like an N-word in one of the soundtrack songs and stuff like that, whatever. I can't watch R-rated movies, can't listen to secular music, can't do this, can't do that, can't have fun. And I guess the deeper issue there is that I'm so broken. Mikey, we were joking earlier about Blindside. I went back in preparation for that concert and was listening to some of their old music, which I loved, which formed the soundtrack to my high school. And one of the songs on their first album is called Invert. And the point of the song is that God is the inverse of me. Like, God is everything good and pure and holy, and I, by definition, am everything that is, like, awful and wretched and terrible. And while I don't want to downgrade the reality of sin or the reality of our brokenness, that's actually just bad theology. Human beings bear the image of God, and again, much like Adonis's legacy, that image of God will not be suppressed or denied or covered up. Like, it bursts forth and insists on presenting itself in the world. And in my own church, like, we are trying to help people discern their loves, the deep, deep, deep desires of their hearts as the things that God is using to call them into life. So for me, I thought it was beautiful that when Adonis embraces his legacy, he doesn't have to pretend that the Johnson part of his legacy didn't exist or was false. It's true. It's just not the whole story. And I would say that about our Christian experience too. Like, while we are apart from Christ, let me say it this way. What total depravity means is not that we are complete bags of dog poo that deserve to be lit on fire and tossed into hell. What it means is that apart from the work of the Spirit, we are utterly without hope. And those are two significantly different statements. Significant in that we don't have to say that every part of the human experience apart from Christ is evil, wicked, sinful, terrible. We just have to say they're not salvific. And that's fine. That doesn't mean they're not good. Doesn't mean there's not something holy or beautiful or praiseworthy in them. And so I really enjoyed seeing that Adonis embracing his legacy didn't mean turning his back on who he was. It actually meant becoming more fully who he was. It meant not ignoring this part of himself that he had been denying for so long. And for me, when I'm talking with people who are not followers of Jesus, that's what I'm inviting them into, is not abandon everything you thought was your life and find this thing over here. It's realizing that the life that God is calling you to is a bigger, more beautiful, more amazing life that's around the life that you're already living, not apart from it.
No, I would say that reminds me a lot of something that I've been hearing from one of our pastors, Elijah Lovejoy, who's been on the show a couple times. He's been really enamored as of late because he says, what does Christianity have to offer non-Christians if their life is already good, you know, like,
yeah,
typically the salvation story for the human goes, I was living life, then things got super bad, and then Christ met me in my brokenness and then lifted me up, which can kind of be a very eye rolling story for people who feel like they're good people already. But he kind of points to the scriptures and says, well, not only is God going to redeem the broken, not only is he going to raise up the dead, but he's come to make the good things better. So he's like, he kind of points out how Christ is pointing to things and saying, well, you think this thing that you love so much is the best it could be? I'm telling you that with Christ, it would be the best that it could be.
Yeah. So it's, if we insist that every conversion experience has to look like Paul on the road to Damascus, mm-hmm. right? Like, you were murdering people and then Jesus found you and completely transformed you into this awesome person. And that happened. And that does happen. Like, I know people that mm-hmm. that's their experience, and that's beautiful. It's beautiful. Who would deny that that's beautiful?
Yeah.
But a lot of us actually have stories that are more like Peter, where Jesus came along and he's like, hey, what are you doing? It's like, fishing. I like it. I'm good at it. And Jesus is like, cool, why don't you come with me and fish for people instead? And it's like, oh, okay. Well, that's like what I was doing, but better. Like, just like what you said, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Peter wasn't a bad dude. Like, he was a good guy. He was being responsible. He had a job. He was working for his parents, like, in the family business, right? Like, maintained. Like, he's a good dude. And Jesus just came and blew up his picture of what life could look like. And I think that we do ourselves a disservice when we insist that every conversion narrative should look like Paul on the road to Damascus. Mm-hmm. When in fact, if you count all of the people who followed Jesus in the New Testament, like, one of them is Paul, right?
Yeah.
So that's one of the things about Legacy that I was really taken with by the film, is this embrace of his identity. And the other was, again, I just think it's beautiful. I guess you're just hearing all of my baggage from the Christianity I mm-hmm. had growing up. And it mm-hmm. wasn't all bad. I had some amazing,
allegedly
people, right? I know, right? I guess they're responsible for me. So take that for what it's worth. but let me say it this way, that I absorbed through the kind of Christianity I was raised in that we didn't have to care about this life or this world, that nothing that happened here mattered because it was all about the afterlife. It was all about heaven. It was all about this new, you know, this other place we were going to. I've since become convinced that that is incredibly myopic. I don't think people who believe that way are like going to hell or something like that. I just think that it's like they're missing out on the fullness of the good news that Jesus brings us. And so it would have been easy. It would be easy if there was a Christian who had an axe to grind against creed. They could rail against like the humanist, you know, everyone dies. There's nothing after this life. So make the most of what you have. Like that message is definitely in the film. Though I don't think the film does enough with that to say definitively that it's like making an anti-supernatural or anti-afterlife statement by any means. I could just see if someone's looking to pick a fight, they could pick that fight. And I would say, again, putting a strong emphasis on the here and now doesn't have to diminish the afterlife. I got into an argument with a good atheist friend of mine who was saying that because Christians have a view of afterlife, they don't have to care about this world. And I pushed back and I said, but okay, again, as an atheist, like what you care most about is evidence, right? I was like, you don't have evidence for that claim. Like most hospitals in the world are called Saint something or other mm-hmm. because they were started by Christians, right? In fact, the Christian faith ought to drive us to make the most out of every day and to rage against death. Even though we know death is defeated, it is still called the final enemy. And we don't have to just fold our hands and sit back and wait for, you know, when the roll is called up yonder. We can be compelled by a holy love to make the most of every moment that we have, to rage against death, to rage against the sting of death. And again, I thought this film did that really well. Mm. I enjoyed it quite a lot for that. So I could imagine someone not being a fan of that, but I'm just not there.
Well, I like how you basically answered my follow-up question as well, which was kind of like, if our eternal reward is in heaven, why fight so hard for life and for legacy here on earth? You know, so, but Reed, I would love you to, add anything to that if you wanted to.
Yeah, sure. There's a lot that you said, JR, that I find very compelling. Like one of the things that I would say, because it's foremost in my mind, is anybody who would bristle about the creed is really espousing a humanistic, you know, make your own legacy, kind of thing. That was not my read on the film, and I would actually confront that reading of the film, because when I walked out of it, you know, we already talked about how Rocky is kind of the new Mickey. Well, now, honestly, Mickey's a little elevated in my mind because I saw where Rocky came from and how he got to
nice.
Rocky.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? Mickey's a little elevated to me now, because what did Mickey have before? You know, what life did Mickey lead before he found Rocky Balboa in there and wanted to train him? And then also, undeniably, the legacy of Apollo Creed is elevated. Like Apollo Creed died in Rocky IV, but because of what they say about him and because of how his spirit, and I say that, you know, literally and figuratively and metaphorically, because of how his spirit infuses what happens in that last fight, and it's somewhat of the stakes that they're fighting over mm-hmm. is his importance and what he did. Like, I think that a reading saying like, oh no, you have to just build your own legacy. I'm like, to me, I walked out of the, yes, I thought highly of Rocky Balboa. Yes, I thought highly of Adonis Creed, but I also thought more highly of Apollo Creed and of Mickey than I did going into that film. And there could be much to say in terms of parallels to Christianity about how by sometimes simply embracing what God has placed within you to do and doing it to the best of your ability, you don't necessarily just elevate yourself. You don't necessarily just position yourself. I feel like a lot of times we placate things, you know, we absorb this sort of false humility, you know, like I, you know, if I do well with a piece of writing or if I do well at my job, you know, and somebody comes to me like, hey, you know what, you did really good. That was really good. And then we're so tempted most of the time to say like, oh man, it's all God. Like God just did that, you know, I want to be sincere about this. I'm not poking any fun for
it's,
even
yeah,
an
it's
iota.
Not wrong.
No, I'm not poking any, you know, I'm not making light of that mentality, but I will say that there is nothing wrong with simply saying, thank you. That's very kind of you to say. And knowing in your heart, like, God, thank you. We did good. Like, you know, like we did this. There's an old joke that a friend of mine told me where there's a man who's sitting on a plot of land. And when, you know, the plot of land has growth and vegetation and he, you know, works the field and he plants and he harvests and it's got, you know, this this full birth of growth on it. And somebody walks down, and when somebody walks up, they say to him like, hey, this is a beautiful field, a beautiful plot of land that you and the Lord have here together. And he says back to the man, yeah, you should have seen it when the Lord had it all to himself. And the basic idea there, meaning I think, and I feel so passionately about this, I think that what God desires of us is cooperation with the Holy Spirit. I think that he has planted things within us that he wants us to use. There's a reason why the talent, the parable of the talents, the man who buries his talent in the dirt is called a wicked servant. You know, like I think sometimes you can embrace the idea of I am developing my own legacy if you're, but again, keeping in mind that in the context of the story, Adonis Creed is developing his own legacy by both names on the trunks. Mm-hmm. It's not by saying like, no, I am this. You know, it's when he embraces where he came from and embraces what is within him that he's then propelled into his own legacy. And I think for ourselves too, the more we embrace like, hey, you know what? I am a sinner. I have done these things wrong. I am largely what's wrong with this world, but I've been redeemed and I have been saved by somebody who, you know, the cost of my failure has been put on the back of somebody who could carry it. So I don't have to worry about it anymore. And I think the more we are in touch with what it is that's within us that's trying to get out, I think we actually glorify God more, depending on where your frame of mind is, depending on, you know, where your bent is. If you are bent towards just an understanding and awareness of, I couldn't do this any other way, I'm just doing what it is that I feel like God's placed in me to do, then naturally you are bringing him glory. You're bringing him, you're elevating and exalting him by simply doing what it is he's put in you to do and doing it well, whether that be at your job on a regular basis or fighting in a fictional ring or, you know, for these filmmakers and creators, like they're talented. Mm-hmm. And I believe because I'm a Christian and because this is the way that I see the world, I believe God gave them the skills with which to do this and they're doing it very well. So I walk away and I'm having these thoughts and these conversations that lead me back into a deeper place in my own spirituality. And how could we not say that that's glorifying to him?
Yeah.
Sincerely, you know?
Yeah. I've genuinely never understood. I mean, I conceptually understand, but I've always deeply disagreed with people who have said, like, yeah, you're not allowed to take pride in what you do. Or, I mean, so I preach a lot, right? And I work really hard on my sermons. I work really hard on my sermon process. And I meet people all the time that are like, well, I mean, do you even, like, leave room for the Holy Spirit?
Because they say it like that, right? They say like,
yeah, they do. I mean, it's, like, really condescending. And the idea is that because I work so hard on this thing that God has called me to do, I must not actually care about God or invite God into that process. And I'm like, I don't even understand your thought process there. I mean, isn't Paul, again, the one who says that he ran the race, you know, that he strived for the prize? Like, if God has called you to do something, how could you do any less than work with everything you have to be excellent at it?
Yeah.
I just genuinely don't understand this idea that if I care about something, then I must be making my own legacy or going my own way or, you know, an act of rebellion or leaving the Holy Spirit out of it. Or I just, people that I meet who are engaged in spiritual activities and are doing it lazily are the people that I deeply distrust and certainly don't want to be co-laboring in the gospel with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we've got too much to do, y'all, to like be sitting around, you know.
I feel like that's a t-shirt, JR. We got too much to do, y'all.
Seriously, I mean, no. But like, I don't know. Like, I just don't understand it. So,
well, I was gonna say I hate to do this, but we're about at that time where we need to start wrapping up. I've let us go this far just because it's been so good. But I want to respect the fact that people need to listen to another podcast sometime this month. So, but that doesn't mean that we won't have time to gush a little bit more and kind of bring some other things out. So hopefully this will be the shortest part of the show. And that is something that we didn't enjoy about this film. So, JR, was there anything about this film that you didn't enjoy? Well, we typically call it our come on moment.
I don't think so.
Good.
That's a great answer. How about this? I would have liked it to have been 2 hours longer.
Is it like we could have seen four or five more fights?
I wanted Creed 2 to happen right now.
Right now?
Yeah.
I think that's completely fair. Reed, same question. Was there anything that you actually did kind of have a gripe with about this film?
No, I mean, honestly, the way that I usually phrase it when I'm talking to people about films that I don't care for is if I can, in the car ride home, think of, you know, a few choices in your story that you could have done that would have been stronger, then you didn't develop your story enough, just in my opinion, because mm-hmm. I'm untrained and unskilled at this. So if I can automatically think of some choices that you could have made that would have been better, then you likely didn't spend enough time with your story. I walked out of Creed, could not think of a single choice that they made that I wasn't completely on board with, and it captivated me and it took me away. There was not a single come on moment for mm-hmm. me. A friend of mine did point out that they wished that when Rocky was struggling with cancer, that they had somehow, you know, addressed like his son calling him or something, yeah. or his son, you know, playing a part in it. But for me, I even felt like for the story at this point, Adonis is kind of his adopted son. Adonis mm-hmm. is for him what he tried to do with Robert, which is train him up to be a fighter, train him up to, you know, like, you know, he resists it at first, but like, I was like, Adonis is there with him. So my friend even tries to point out what they didn't like about the film. And I'm like, I defend that too. There was really nothing for me. There was no come on moment for me.
They address that Rocky is estranged from his son, right?
Yeah, they do.
So I that didn't bother me. Especially now, I guess here's one. If you had to pick a nit, you could say that this film relies heavily on the character work that the previous six films have done. So we get a couple of lines about Rocky and his son, but if you haven't seen Rocky Balboa, then you don't really understand it. Mm-hmm. You don't really understand why his son wouldn't be there. But again, it's the seventh film in a franchise. Like, that's what it's allowed to do by virtue of that fact, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I had a specific conversation with a coworker who had never seen a Rocky movie, and I was very curious to see how they responded to Creed. And it's exactly what you're saying. Some of the weight of the relationships were lost. Like they didn't understand, you know, the moment on the mat that we talked about earlier didn't hit them as hard, and the musical cue coming in didn't mean anything to them, but they still strongly responded to the characters and still felt like this is a movie I want to champion, you know, no pun intended. So I think you're right. If you really wanted to get nitpicky about it, yeah, I think that is a genuine complaint that it's like, well, it is beholden to what's come before, but you got to know that. You got to know that it's going to be.
But not even in a completely necessary way. I mean, sure, you lose some depth, but it doesn't like miss the mark completely because you haven't seen the previous films.
I agree.
And I think that's one of the most important things. Many films that build on previous films typically rely, I think, too heavily. Like, if you didn't see the previous Hunger Games film, you are basically lost.
Like, I agree.
You know, you're out of it. So, okay. So we transition and read. So the opposite. If you can narrow it down to one or two things, what were your favorite moment, parentheses?
Well, you know, the two, there are a bunch, but the two for me, I have reflected on almost once an hour since seeing the film about mm-hmm. Creed laying, about Adonis laying on the mat, mm-hmm. seeing the flashes from his life before him, and then the image of his father raising him up off the mat, which there could be a lot said about that on a spiritual side too, mm-hmm. but the image of his father, you know, raising him up off the mat, hit me like a ton of bricks, and I almost came out of my own chair when I saw that. I thought that was a powerful choice. It was one of my favorite moments in the film. And then the speech that he has. Oh, no, I have to mention this. I've already talked about the speech. When Rocky hears that he has been diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, and when they talk to him about treatment, when you know he says, "My wife tried that." Man, I want Sylvester Stallone to be nominated for an Oscar so bad, because that might be the finest moment I have ever seen him give in anything. And I'm including the first Rocky in that, too. That, like, I think from an acting standpoint, that was powerful, powerful stuff. And
yeah, it was incredible.
Loved the choices he made as an actor there. So I've already talked about the speech and, you know, Adonis laying on the mat. So I got to throw that in there, too. Stallone's performance in this is an absolute knockout.
Oh,
boy. Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, it works. All right, JR.
I don't pretend that this moment is anything other than like expert emotional manipulation. But all through the movie, they've been teasing the Rocky theme and the score. And then they finally give it to us in like the most perfect moment of the film. And I nearly stood up out of my seat and cheered. Mm-hmm. Our whole theater cheered. I mean, it was incredible. And I was just like, I mean, I knew after like the second or third time they teased the theme, I was like, okay, so we know where this is going. And then it went there and I was happy. I was mm-hmm. just a pure, pure, unadulterated joy. So yeah, incredible.
And that's all?
No, that's not all, but that was far and away my favorite moment in the film.
Cool. Okay.
Your lists don't have another hour, Mikey.
Yeah, that's I know.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I was trying to slow us down so we could, because I thought there would be some, you know, but that's fine. Because like I said, we've hit on the entire movie.
We could talk about the Bianca character and what a fantastic female figure she is in the film.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, do that real quick. Like, give us some insight on why she's such a great character real quick.
She's her own boss. I mean, so, again, Rocky, as great as that film is, it does feel a little dated at this point. Mm-hmm. Rocky is very – like, she's all that at her, right? Mm-hmm. They took her glasses off, and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, turns out she's smoking hot. Good thing Rocky's there to, like, make her not a dork anymore. And in this film, Bianca is clearly the cool one in their relationship, right? And she's drawing boundaries. She's communicating what she wants and what she doesn't want. She is strong, confident, capable. And yeah, I just thought as a well-written female character, she's very, very strong.
Yeah, but also not distant or aloof, cold, you know. So like she can be everything Like, she doesn't have to be a stereotype one way or the other, right?
Yeah.
Well, for my favorite moments is, like, the bullet list. So, we obviously had mentioned the extended fight shot because it was kind of like, I believe, Reed, you were talking about, or Jer, one of you, probably both of you. It's like, it's like around the time the first round's ending, I'm like, wait a minute. This, like, we haven't cut, have we? Like, there hasn't, like, this has all been, I've been, like, in the ring with Adonis this entire time from like, a while. So I was just blown away by that. And I said, you go, Coog. You got it. I love that moment in the ring that we talked about when he said, when he says, you know, I have to know that I'm not a mistake. But I love, and when it was like, it was starting to go down my man tears were going down my cheek kind of slowly. But then at the end when he said, if you could say something to your father right now. And when I was writing the notes for this show, I was like starting to well up when he just said, I would tell him that I love him and I know he didn't leave me on purpose.
Oh man. Yeah.
Oh God. I was like, cause as soon as he stuck that microphone in his face, I was like, okay, finally, we're going to get something corny and dumb. Like, you know, thanks, Dad. Like, but it was just like, oh gosh, what a line.
Oh yeah.
So not only that, I would say probably an emotional moment that sadly didn't last long enough to, I guess, get the visible emotive reaction from me. But there were so many ways that we could have verbally told the audience that Adonis had issues with his dad. But there's that scene towards the beginning where he goes into the like projector room or whatever, and he plays that fight of Rocky and Apollo, and he's sitting there boxing his dad.
As Rocky.
And like he knows, you know, so you can tell that he's done this so many times, and the music's swelling. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, dude's fighting, you know, he's fighting.
My heart was already racing in that scene. Yeah.
So I would say those are all the things that swelled up in the movie that were my favorite. The thing that's external to the film that sadly I'll probably never get to experience again is things that I think both of you have hit on as well. And that was your experience in the theater.
Oh yeah.
During that fun, like I usually get very upset when people talk or clap or do anything. But during that final fight, when Adonis goes down, there was like an audible gasp that like went its way across the theater. It was like, yeah. And like the theater was like dead silent until someone was like, he's got to get up. Like someone yelled, he's got to get up during that montage. And then when he went up, there was clapping when he stood up along with the like as the music kicked in and the crowd noise kind of came back in to the actual film, the entire theater was clapping and excited. And when he knocked what's his face down pretty Ricky Conlon when he knocked him down, when he landed that punch, there was like an uproarious like, you know, everyone, like people stood up in their chairs in the theater, and I was overcome. I felt like I was at the fight. Like there was, I wasn't in a theater watching a movie, I was at the fight.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. And that, like I said, that the sad part about that is I probably won't get that again, you know, in a full packed, you know, 150, 200 people, person theater. So, you know, and especially when that's the last thing that happens before you leave the theater.
Yeah.
That's just, oh, it's so great. So, I feel like there's so few movies that can do that.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I know we're wrapping up. I just have to give some lip service to the brilliance again of Ryan Coogler of ending the actual film on the steps, like instead of ending in the ring where most of the other films do, like that quiet moment that is just so pregnant with metaphor, both for the meaning in the franchise and, you know, meaning for these characters. It was just, it was a beautiful final note.
Mm. Well, on that addition, are there any other final thoughts that you want to hit on before we close out?
No, I think I've probably talked more than you'd rather me to.
No.
I thought it was a beautiful film. It's my second favorite film of the year so far, and it is duking it out with Inside Out as my mm-hmm. favorite film of this year. Who knows, by the time I've done thinking about both of them, maybe it'll take the top spot, but it's just a beautiful, powerful, wonderful film that I would recommend to really anybody. I think it is effective and brilliant, and I'm so happy that it's here.
Mm. JR, any final thoughts?
No, I mean, this is definitely in my top 10, maybe in my top 5. It's fantastic. I also struggle to imagine a person who wouldn't like this film.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fantastic. It works on every level. Mm-hmm. And I heartily anticipate Creed's 2-6, followed by Rocky's estranged grandson seeking out Adonis, the old grizzled veteran, to learn about his grandfather and learn how to fight. And then we get the Balboa franchise spinning off from Creed. Mm. I'm ready.
Yes.
For it. Bring
full,
it on.
Full circle.
I said to my wife, I'll watch Stallone play this part if he has to do it from a wheelchair.
Yeah. I mean, Michael B. Jordan is incredible. We didn't talk about him a ton, but he and Sylvester Stallone carry this film. Coogler has an incredibly good hand on the camera, knows how to get what he wants out of these actors. I would be shocked if this doesn't show up with a Best Picture nod, hopefully at least supporting for Sly. Best Actor is going to be tough this year, but I wouldn't be sad if Michael B. Jordan got it. I thought it was just criminal that he didn't get something for Fruitvale.
Mm-hmm. Or anything got anything for Fruitvale.
Yeah.
Well, and my final thought basically echoes you guys. Creed is honestly one of my top films of the year. I have it in my top 5 right now. Kind of like Reed, what you're saying, the more I chew on it, the better I like it. And it might slowly climb its way up, but it's one of the best films I've seen all year. And I'm completely surprised that it was this good. I expected to enjoy it by the time, like, I realized, kind of like some of the second previews are coming around, but I never imagined that it would be in my top 5, wrestling, you know, with the top 3. So I was so excited, and I recommended it to basically everybody. You know, everybody's like, oh, what should I go see this weekend? You know, we hadn't called. I was like, don't care. I mean, the Hunger Games movie was perfectly fine. Go see Creed. People were like, should I go see Creed? You know, should I go see Creed?
Definitely go see The Good Dinosaur.
Yeah, oh gosh, don't go see The Good Dinosaur. We'll record on that next week. I can't recommend it highly enough. And I think the thing that's wonderful about it is that it meets that, or it has that golden kind of balance between just really good filmmaking and incredible conversation starter / theme / story depth. So that I've said this before, I've kind of joked about it. Unfortunately, we only have around an hour and a half. And, you know, we barely hit on half the characters and some of the best moments in the film. So if you go see this movie, you should have plenty to talk to your friends about, to talk to anybody about, to talk to, you know, your teenagers, to talk to your dad, you know, to talk to your mentor. There's so much to talk about in this film. It just works on so many levels. So we've had an excellent conversation. I want you to be able to continue those conversations if you so choose. So Reed, how can people find what you do and or you in general, like on the internet?
Sure. Three places right now. You can find more of my work, including the podcast that I'm a co-host of, and write articles as often as I can for on morethanonelesson.com. That's all one word, just more than one lesson. I also have a personal website, just readlackey.com, where I put up reflections about faith and culture and short fiction. The tagline on it is fiction you could finish on a coffee break. So just little pieces like that. And then I'm also on Twitter, just @readlackey.
Awesome, awesome. And I'll make sure I have all that in the show notes, because I've never had, like I said, this is your first time. You did an awesome job, and I want to make sure I get those links right. So,
thank you.
JR.
I blog very occasionally over. I actually probably blog more frequently at Real World Theology now than I do at Norval, because I have switched most of my content generation over to podcasts. I have mm-hmm. several different podcasts on a variety of topics, from pop culture, theology, and history on Storymen, to my Don't Split Up Horror podcast, to theology and church leadership, and all kinds of other stuff. The best way to find all of those is to go to NorvalRogers.com/podcasts. Mm-hmm. Norval Rogers is Shaggy's real name from Scooby-Doo, if you can't figure out how to spell it. All my podcasts are listed there, and you can connect with me over those places.
Awesome, awesome. And you can follow me on Twitter at Fizzification. Obviously, you can find me and all the stuff that we do for Real World Theology at www.realworldtheology.com. Subscribe to the podcast if you've enjoyed it. Leave us some feedback. It really, really helps. And heck, in the comment section, if you find this, let us know. Have you seen Creed? Where would it rank among your Rocky films? And most importantly, are you as excited as JR to see Creed 2? So, inquiring minds want to know. Anyway, we're grateful for our excellent guests. So please follow them on social media. Like I said, we'll have all that in the show notes. We're thankful for you, the listeners. It means a lot that you would listen to something this long and, give us feedback and continue these conversations. We had a very long conversation before the podcast started about how important it is that people aren't just watching film. They're thinking about film, and they're thinking about story, and they're thinking about entertainment. So thank you for taking the time to do that. We really appreciate it. And until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye. Or, I may have some pastors on, or like JR, who is a pastor. We tend to...
Easy throwing that P word around.
Sorry, the good Reverend Forrest Arrows. Oh, that was such a good joke. I hope we don't get smoten for that.
I know, right? It's one of my
favorites. I hope it starts a flame war in the comments.
This heretic Reed and his low view of God.
I'll be like, I didn't even know he was going to be on the podcast, or I wouldn't have agreed to do it.
I want the flame war to be so bad that like Rachel Held Evans has to come and comment on it.
That would be the true mark of notoriety.
That's right. If
we could get her to take, but she would probably be some sort of middle of the road, like kind of, I don't know, sometimes seeds. Grow, and everybody will be like, oh, she's so brilliant.
Oh, should a Christian see this because it'll make them go to hell? Kind of thing.
Yeah,
trick question. Yes.
Yes.